The Nine Lives of Montezuma by Michael McPurgo. And here we have the fifth life. Matthew had left school and had come back to work full-time on the farm alongside his father. Like Montezuma, Matthew was fully fledged now, and the two came to spend more and more time together. Farming is a solitary way of life, and Matthew welcomed the company of the cat as he followed him to all corners of the farm. He never called Montezuma to come, but he expected him to be there with him, and he always was. No matter where he was or what he was doing, sheep shearing, hedge laying, hay making, or out shooting, the cat would be there, even if Matthew could not see him. By the third winter of his life, Montezuma had inveigled his way into the thinner sanctum and established himself in the sitting room. It had been a gradual, imperceptible invasion, but he had now come to occupy the arm of the sofa nearest to the fire. Matthew's father had put up a stern resistance, bowling him out through the door and back into the kitchen on several occasions. "I'll not have it," he'd say. "I spent all my days with beasts, and I'll not have the mucky things taking over in here." But Montezuma was immune to his insults and crept back in surreptitiously, hiding behind the sofa. And one evening, however, when Matthew's father was too tired to bother, Montezuma was allowed to clamber up onto the sofa and stay there, and from that moment the cat knew the battle was won. Matthew and his mother were tactful enough never to draw attention to the cat as he purred provocatively on his perch overlooking the fire. They exchanged knowing looks and smiled secretly at the subtlety of Montezuma's quiet victory. It was in the middle of lambing, sometime after Christmas, that the unbelievable happened. Matthew came in after evening milking. He had checked the in-lamb ewes out in the fields, bringing in those that looked nearest to lambing into the safety of the big barn, and he called out from the back door as he came in, "Could be snow on the way, so I brought the ewes inside again." But his mother was waving at him to be quiet, her finger pressed against her lips. On tiptoe, they approached the door of the sitting room and peeped in. Matthew's father lay back on the sofa, his feet occupying Montezuma's sleeping patch. Montezuma, however, had chosen the only soft place still available to him on the sofa. He lay stretched out on the old man's stomach, gently rising and falling in rhythm with the snoring. But Montezuma was not asleep. He was too content to sleep. He looked up towards the door and winked at them, the smile unashamedly on his face. The two behind the door were convulsed with mirth. They were quite unable to control their delight and clung to each other in an effort to stifle their laughter, but it was too late. Like the fee-fi-fo-fum giant, Matthew's father awoke at their muffled giggling, and the cat was astute enough to leap for cover, but he did not move fast enough. He was picked up roughly by the nape of his neck and held up by his adversary, whom he now faced nose to nose, his feet dangling in the air. "Never again," said Matthew's father. "No cat climbs on me and lives. Not twice. Never again." And he threw the cat out through the door, past Matthew and his mother, who were still laughing too much to lift a finger in protest. Montezuma picked himself out from under the pump in the kitchen and ran out into the night, bruised but not bowed. He would be back to claim his rights. It was a cold, still night, and the cat had been inside for most of the day, and at the end of the garden path he stopped, lifted his nose and sniffed the air. There was a strange heaviness he had not experienced before, and it alarmed him. He heard the dogs barking at each other across the valley, as they did every night, but then sharper to his ears, the call of the distant she-cat. Montezuma listened intently for a moment, plotted the direction of the call and calculated his course, and then he padded away under the gate, up through the hedgerow, and down across the black fields towards the river. That night the snows came, gently at first in huge floating flakes, the kind of snow that builds up quickly and silently. By breakfast the next morning, the snow was a foot high around the house, and the world had turned perfect outside. The roads had merged into hedges, and the hedges into flat fields. The mud by the gateways had covered under the same universal white shroud. The farm was new again and deathly quiet. Matthew was not worried about his sheep. It was far better to have most of the flock out in the cold, fresh air, even in snow, than cooped up in the barns where disease could spread quickly. He had already checked the ewes, brought in the night before, and helped to deliver twin lambs before he came back in for his breakfast. It was then that he realised that Montezuma was still not back. "Seen Monty," he said. "He usually comes over and checks the sheep with me, but I've not seen him about. Have you?" "He'll be back," said his father. "He always comes back, that cat does. Night out on the tiles, I shouldn't wonder, little devil." "Sit down, Matthew, and eat your breakfast," said his mother, "and stop worrying about that cat. It's the sheep you should worry about if this snow goes on." "It won't, Mum. It's stopped already, and the sun's working on it now. Won't be anything left by the evening." "You watch those sheep, my lad. They can only stand so much depth of snow. Better to be safe than sorry." "Don't worry, Dad," Matthew said. "I've seen them. They're all right. They found cover in under the trees by the brook." "You counted them," his father went on. "You're sure they're all there?" "Every one, Dad. They're all there." But Matthew had his mind elsewhere. Montezuma had always been back by the morning. He would hear him yowling on the window ledge outside his bedroom window. He would talk to him as the cat followed him around on his early morning walk. He had never gone missing before. It was almost all sheep work those deep winter days. His father had taken the milking in hand and left the flock to him. It was an incessant round of checking the in-lamb ewes, the single couples and the double couples, and feeding them and injecting the newborn lambs, wringing the tails, feeding the tame lambs, and then back to help with another lambing. And so far, it had been a good lambing year, with no scour and very few stillborn lambs. There had been problems with one set of twin lambs getting tied up with each other inside and presenting themselves backwards, but they had only lost two living lambs and one ewe that never recovered after giving birth. So Matthew was busy all that day, too busy to do anything about Montezuma, and from time to time he thought of the cat and called out for him, but there was no answering cry. There was no time to go looking for him. The snow did thaw during the afternoon, but Matthew was sure it would be gone by the next day, and that was why he left most of the flock outside that night, bringing in again only those about to lamb and those freshly lambed. Last thing before he turned in, he went over to check the sheep, and as he came back across the yard, scuffling through the muddy snow, he called out once more for the cat and listened for the response, but none came. It was just as he reached the top of the granary steps that he thought he heard Montezuma, a faint call, possibly coming from the sheep field across the brook. And Matthew ran down towards the brook and then stood silent in the snow to listen again. He called out time and again, but heard nothing more. The wind was getting up and he was cold, and the cat would come back when he was ready, he thought. But he went to bed that night troubled and unconvinced by his own artificial optimism. While they slept, the blizzard struck. The snow swirled around the house, whipped up from the fields around, and driven by hurricane-force winds that battered the house. Matthew was woken up by the rattle of his windows and a door banging outside in the farmyard. He sat up in bed to listen to the howl of the storm. It seemed to him that the house might be uprooted at any moment, and carried off as the gusts hit the house, he felt it shake and shiver in its foundations. He knew he would have to get up. The sheep should not be outside in this. He met his father, who'd woken but the same thought, in the passage outside. Both dressed quickly, pulling on heavy overcoats, buttoning up against the storm. Matthew fetched Sam from the shippen where he slept, and they stumbled out together across the meadow and down the hill towards the brook. They took shelter in the spinney under the old quarry before crossing the bridge into the sheep field. At times, they had to walk backwards to prevent the snow stinging their eyes. Each had to pull the other out of great drifts that had gathered like breaking waves across the field, and every word had to be screamed out against the wind. And even so, in the end, they had to resort to sign language. The torches they were carrying proved useless, unable to penetrate the driving snow. They could feel their cheeks freezing up. The snow stung their eyes, blinding them. They fought it, bending into the wind, forcing their legs forward. Finally, they discovered the sheep sheltering down in the corner of the field where the hedge joined the brook. They were packed together, a great off-white huddle in the snow. Sam worked well that night, bounding through drifts of snow several times his own height. He drove them cleanly across the bridge, up over the hill and into the shelter of the yard. It was a slow drive, the sheep wanting to return to the shelter they had left. Counting was difficult. The sheep moved incessantly around each other like mass molecules, and after two counts, the grim truth had to be accepted. They were missing six ewes with their lambs. A further trek out into the fields proved fruitless, and the storm drove them back indoors, exhausted and cold. In the comforting warmth of the kitchen, Matthew and his father cradled a hot tea that was pressed into their hands, and they sat in silence around the stove, each buried in his own despondency. "Monty will have a job getting back in this," said Matthew. "Never you worry," said his mother. "He'll be hiding up somewhere like the sheep." "I hope you're right, my dear," Matthew's father sounded broken and old. "Soon as the storm blows itself out, we'll have to search every drift. But if it goes on like this, they won't last long. Nothing will, not in this." For 2 days and nights, the blizzard continued. Water pipes froze, the electricity was cut off, and then the telephone went dead, and they were besieged on all sides by drifts of snow that seemed to have grown every time they looked, cutting off the light from the windows and covering the lanes from one hedgetop to the other. Tractors were useless. Every bale of hay had to be manhandled over the snow. It was all they could do to keep the stock fed and watered, and then every spare moment was spent shovelling the snow away from the doorways and paths in an effort to keep open the lifelines to the barns. On the morning of the third day, the wind dropped and the sun shone. They could begin to search for the missing animals. Montezuma was nowhere to be found. Matthew had searched every barn and shipping he could reach. He called out across the white wasteland, but even as he called, he knew there would be no hope. With the snow more than 3 feet thick everywhere and drifts of 20 feet, even his faith in the cat's ability to survive had faded. He turned his mind to the missing ewes and tried to forget the cat. Every available hour of daylight now was spent probing in the drifts of the sheep. The washing line pole, broom handles, anything that was long enough was brought into service, and they worked systematically around the perimeter drifts of each sheep field. On that first day after the storm, they searched the drifts in the fields by the brook and found nothing. But the next morning they discovered their first missing ewe trapped in a drift up against a spinney. She was lying dead with her lamb beside her. It was an ill omen, but just finding her gave the rescuers the encouragement they needed to work on. Like his father, Matthew was consumed by an exhaustion so profound that they had ceased to talk to one another. Once fed and warmed up back at the house, they were out again probing into drifts in a tacitly agreed determination not to give up. 3 days later, a week after the storm began, when hope of finding anything alive had all but vanished, Matthew felt his stick strike something soft. Like a desperate angler who cannot believe the pull on the end of his line, Matthew refused to believe his first impression. He probed once more, close to the same hole, gently. His stick met a little resistance at first and then sank into something that moved as he touched it. He screamed his excitement, and in a few seconds his mother and father were at his side probing to confirm his find. The sticks were thrown to one side and a digging began, and it was a huge drift that had climbed halfway up the trunk of a great oak tree whose roots bulged out from the bank, creating a warren of holes and hiding places, a favourite place for the lambs. In half an hour they had broken through into the roof of the hollow, and Matthew pulled the snow away feverishly and peered through. "They're here," he said. "They're all here, all five, and the lambs as well, and everyone's alive." And as if to prove the point, One of the lambs set up a tremendous bleating. The rest was easy. They scraped away the side of the hole, reached in and hauled the sheep out, one by one, onto the snow. Matthew was reaching in to catch the last lamb that didn't seem to want to leave this sanctuary, when he noticed there was something lying in a hole behind one of the roots. At first he thought it was another lamb, for it was covered with a thin coating of snow. But lambs do not mew, and they are not ginger striped underneath. Montezuma was staggering towards him, shaking the snow from his back. He looked up at Matthew, his eyes squinting against the sun. Matthew reached in and picked him up carefully. He turned to his mother and father. "Look what I found," he said. "Back from the dead."